This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, Dr. Robert George of Princeton University, Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop, and others for the 2021 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
I understand that President Biden demonstrates a degree of piety and ritual, but I don't know the value of someone's faith that can perform rituals to the neglect of their doctrine, and often not just to the neglect, but to the rejection of their church's doctrine.
Why all of a sudden are we going with the mind being right and the body being wrong, rather than our actual physical reality being right and maybe working on the mind to align with the body?
And that, in my opinion, is the biggest ideological danger in the Western world. People who are frightened witless of being considered bigots, and therefore who do nothing to support the truth.
Jesus himself teaches that it is possible to lose saving faith. Once saved, always saved is just a lie.
This is Mary from Iowa. I love listening to Issues Etc. while walking on Iowa country roads.
The headline in the German newspaper Deutsche Welle: Islamic State poses growing threat across Africa. Not just one country, but many countries in Africa appear ripe for the Islamic State to attempt there the reestablishment of their caliphate. It was the Middle East. They were kind of driven out of the Middle East, and now they are elsewhere, and especially in Africa. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, July the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about the growing threat of the Islamic State in Africa with Raymond Ibrahim of Middle East Forum. We'll be looking back on the Old Testament matriarch Ruth. The church is remembering her on the 16th of July. Dr. Christopher Mitch will be our guest editor of the Concordia Commentary Series. And then a little bit later, Warren Cole Smith joins us. He's president of Ministry Watch. We'll talk about the past, the present, and the future of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, especially after his death last year and the following sex scandal involving him. And apparently for decades in that ministry, insulated as he was from accountability. We'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. We got four soundbites to play for you. Dr. Peter Scare answering the question, is patriarchy evil? Dr. Stephen Parks, do Paul and James disagree on justification? Dr. Alexei Streltsov, how America reminds him of the Soviet Union when before the fall of the wall. And then Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, how Paul teaches eternal election, in particular, the order of that teaching. Your chance to vote for them in the last half hour of the program. You could vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us your vote via Twitter at issuesetc or email talkback@issuesetc.org or wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. Joining us to talk about the growing threat of the Islamic State in Africa, Raymond Ibrahim. He's fellow of the Middle East Forum, author of several books, including his latest, Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. Raymond, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to be with you again.
What has the Islamic State been doing in African countries?
Well, it's actually been massacring a lot of people with a premium and a focus on Christians. One of the issues that gets complicated is who exactly is a member of the Islamic State, who isn't, and there seems to be a very fluid line, as you might expect, between just what you would call a radical Islamic group or a different Islamic group, say, for example, in Somalia, Al-Shabaab, or in Nigeria, Boko Haram, and what is Islamic State proper. And the problem is these all blend in together because ultimately they all have the same vision and goal and naturally work together. So my understanding is Boko Haram in Nigeria, for example, has pledged allegiance to the Islamic State and essentially merged with it, even though it's still called Boko Haram, but there's still some sort of branch that's called Islamic State in Nigeria and so forth. So, but what the Islamic State is doing naturally is it's having retreated from the Middle East largely, even though, of course, it's still there. And again, it's still there in the context that I described, because how do you tell who's the member and who's just the radical Islamic village over there? And that's actually always been the case of one of the problems in identifying him. But of course, they're still there, scattered, but mostly neutralized as a power compared to how they were, for example, in 2014 and 15. And now they've gone to, I think, one of the strategies in going to Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, is it's a largely overlooked, ignored region. And Islamists and jihadists have a very long view, and they're very patient, and they work incrementally. So it may well be that they're trying to grow a base in that area, which has a lot of grassroots support for the reasons that I mentioned, because these areas are full of, like I said, radical Muslims, as we would call them. So there's a natural affinity there. But I think that's ultimately what they're doing. But there's also strategic reasons. Places like Mozambique have that very rich resource region that they've also been attacking and trying to appropriate and so forth. So I think that's their logic, and that's also the difficulty in trying to discern exactly how entangled Islamic State proper is in Africa as opposed to just so-called radical Muslims.
What is the Islamic State?
Well, the Islamic State, and again, it's interesting because you can use it as a capital IS, or you can say small IS, because the Islamic State has existed since the time of Islam as a state. Originally, it was the caliphate since the time of Muhammad, his successors, Umayyad caliphates, Abbasid caliphates, and so forth, and then they became sultanates. So what the Islamic State is trying to do, or this group of people, is they're trying to resuscitate the pre-modern Islamic states, the Islamic form of governance. Because as you know, if you go to most Muslim countries, for example, in the Middle East, they're patterned after Western form of governments. So what the Islamic State and like-minded people are trying to do is just return and bring back and resuscitate the caliphates, and that's why they called themselves a caliphate eventually, which governs according to Islamic Sharia, and that's why the Islamic State was, from a Western point of view, seen as very draconian and radical and violent and so forth, misogynistic, killing and persecuting religious minorities, and all that. That's actually part of Sharia, particularly in the context of jihad, so that's why they were doing all that. But again, this is a cherished dream of many Muslims above and beyond card-carrying members of the Islamic State, which is to bring back a caliphate, because that is the traditional form of governance of Islam. And what we're seeing today, like I said, is patterned after and copied from the West. And so a lot of Muslims don't like that, and they want to see Sharia enshrined, and they want to see that sort of governance with a caliph or sultan. So that's, I think, why it's always had very popular support, even in the heyday of colonialism and Muslim emulation of the West, let's say at the turn of the 20th century. You still had large pockets of people who wanted to return the caliphate. And that group of people has exponentially grown over the last century.
So the goal is to create this new caliphate. What would that look like for the Islamic State? What do they envision there?
Well, the good news is the Islamic State, and again, that sort of Muslim radicals, are slavish to history. In fact, the word Sunnah, when you talk about Sunnis, who are about 90% of the Muslim world, all it means is to emulate. So the Sunnah of Muhammad means following Muhammad's example and his successors, the first caliphs. And so, and they tell us this all the time, and it's plain as day. So the good news with that is we know exactly how a caliphate looked like. And a caliphate was essentially, you can think of it as a monarchy in that it had one man at the very top, the caliph. And then he had all of his rulers and a massive army, often usually made up of slave soldiers. And incidentally, all throughout Africa, you're seeing the return of slave soldiers, where they actually kidnap, abduct, oftentimes non-Muslim boys, and they actually indoctrinate them in jihad, and sometimes even girls, and raise them. And at some points, these children actually go and commit suicide as part of a suicide operation or so-called martyrdom operation. But the key feature, of course, of the caliphate is that it governs according to Islamic Sharia law, which is based on the Quran and the words of Muhammad, and which by any stretch of the imagination is antithetical to what Western norms are. And so you have all the draconian punishments, the hand chopping, the beheadings, the crucifixions, the whipping people, which you still see today, even in places like Iran, if they drink wine or something of this, breaking Islamic law. And of course, all the other things, polygamy, sexual enslavement of so-called infidels, concubinage. So all that comes into play in an Islamic state. And so when we see them, and the Western media got into the habit of disavowing them as having nothing to do with Islam, the Islamic state, when in fact they are the perfect duplicate of historic Islam. And that's what they're trying to do, bring it back.
What is the relationship of the Islamic State to other terrorist organizations and state-sponsored terrorism?
Well, initially, you go back to the birth of the Islamic State. It was grew in Iraq during the war, the U.S. war, as a sort of resistance. But of course, it had its own agenda. And I think some of its members, I think one of its very earliest possible, you can even say, some sort of abstract founder was al-Zarqawi, if you recall, who was also affiliated or actually a member of al-Qaeda. And so in a way, ISIS was and ISIS, of course, means Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And the other acronym, ISIL, is instead of Syria, it's Levant. So that's where it grew in that area. And the relationship is that whereas a group like al-Qaeda, and they actually had this debate, internal argument, whereas groups like al-Qaeda have traditionally tried to present themselves before the West as a sort of moderate group that, yes, we'll kill you, we'll attack you, but we're doing it as a form of reciprocal treatment because you attacked us first because you're oppressing the Muslim world, whether it's through Israel as a proxy, whether it's through anything. So if you look at, for example, in the al-Qaeda reader, if you look at bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri's arguments, it was all, we'll stop if you stop. So there was none of this open need we want to enforce Sharia or any of that stuff. And obviously you can see the logic in that, and it worked very well. The Western media ate it all up, and they made them look. Some of them even presented bin Laden as a freedom fighter and a Robin Hood. That's what Michael Scheuer of the CIA called him way back in 2003, I think. So what ISIS did is actually it dropped the masquerade, and it just said what it is and what it wants, which is it's an Islamic state. ISIS has made it a point to write to the West in magazines and say things like, we want you to know we hate you first and foremost, not because of what you do to us, which is what al-Qaeda said, but because you're an infidel. And it's our duty, according to Allah and the Quran and Muhammad's teachings, to hate you and to kill you wherever we find you. So that obviously created a rift between the al-Qaeda types who were trying to play this sort of propaganda game against the West and the Islamic State types. And then naturally, you can see how the Islamic State got sympathizers because people naturally like a group that's open, upfront, that shows a certain courage, whereas al-Qaeda was sort of playing this sneaky game around the bend. And this is not to say that al-Qaeda's way and other Islamic organizations' ways have, for example, Hamas, the victim card, or Hezbollah. This isn't to say that strategy is gone. It's just to show you the conflict, the relationship, too, between ISIS and these groups, other groups.
So what is the history, then, of the Islamic State in the Middle East?
Well, the first time we get the term Islamic State comes around, I think, and again, it was used generically. It's in Arabic, al-Dawla al-Islamiyya, it just means an Islamic state. And it was used generically that there's an Islamic state in Iraq and in Syria. And that really started in the early 2010, 11, 12. But it really came to the fore right around 13 and 14 and 15. So that's really its origins. But like I said, the ideology of it and its members were always there and in different groups and under different names. And so these names, whether it's al-Qaeda or Islamic State, they shift and their strategies change, but the ideology that drives them all has been around and has been driving Muslims around for centuries.
Raymond Ibrahim is a fellow at the Middle East Forum. He's author of several books, including his latest, Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. You'll find a link to this book at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Raymond, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Todd.
Dr. Christopher Mitchell will be with us on the other side of the break. We will be talking about Old Testament matriarch Ruth. The church is remembering her today. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. continues to rank among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast ChristNet on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christian greeting card makers, gift shop owners, laser cutters, church banner creators, ornamentalists, poster purveyors, jewelry designers, fine artists, hymn writers, wood carvers, UV bed printers, and authors all love Issues Etc. And you'll find our work at adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com. and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.